DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Gregory Erlandson, who is the president and publisher of Our Sunday Visitor Publishing Company. Our Sunday Visitor is one of the largest Catholic publishers in the world, publishing books, periodicals, curriculum, and pamphlets. He's also the co-author, along with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, of Pope Benedict XVI and the Sexual Abuse Crisis, Working for Reform and Renewal. Gregory also serves as the president of the Catholic Press Association. With Gregory Erlandson, we go inside the pages of Our Sunday Visitor and their response to the Year of Faith. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Chris.
I just have to say that it's a wonderful opportunity for us to talk to you right on the eve of the beginnings of the Year of Faith, which commences essentially, it seems like it should always be the Year of Faith, but the Church is highlighting this in October, and your work and the great work of everyone on the staff of Our Sunday Visitor seems to be preparing us for it. Thank you.
Well, this is, it's a year that is going to be defined as it progresses, I think, but that idea of using this as a way to educate Catholics and help the faith become more dynamic in their lives, and really it ties in so well with the new evangelization. So I appreciate you saying that, because I think it comes really close to our whole mission of, you know, how we serve the Church through forming and informing Catholics as well as defending the faith.
Well, part of the big kickoff of this Year of Faith, of course, will be the Synod on the New Evangelization. And once again, Our Sunday Visitor has always tried to be on that cutting edge of evangelizing. Part of that new evangelization is we're going to have to become aware of how generously blessed we've been.
You know, that's really critical. I think that the confusion that's often in people's minds is between evangelization and new evangelization. Of course, evangelization often calls to mind, you know, like a Protestant group going door to door, you know, trying to find people who might be interested in their message or asking them if they've been saved. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's something much more. New evangelization is not only more profound in one sense, that it really involves Catholics renewing their own faith. We're knocking on our own doors. We need, I think, to refire and re-inspire ourselves, and really this renewal starts with ourselves. And that's the exciting element about new evangelization that I think isn't fully appreciated. It can be one of those terms that people can zone out when they hear it, and I think what it really is it's this invitation the Church is extending to us, that we start with ourselves and then we move out from there. And I think this is increasingly critical. We obviously are at a time when many folks are lukewarm in their faith, and this is deadly for the Church. I think, you know, I think in some ways hatred is almost preferable to lukewarmness, because we then become such weak witnesses, and we bear the name Catholic, but we don't really live it at all. And when people look at our lives, they may not see anything in us that's different from anything else they're seeing out there. And that's the worst kind of witness for what the gospel means and what the Church means. So I think this new evangelization, this idea of starting with ourselves, is critical. And I know I've seen it, even in my own parish, I've seen that when this is done very consciously, it can have phenomenal effects. We've had a whole growth not only in people coming in to the RCIA programs, but also in terms of vocations. And it all started with the parish staff really working to, in a sense, evangelize themselves, rather than coming up with one more church program, or you go out to the neighborhoods, or, you know, you make it all about them. Instead, we made it, how do we start with ourselves first?
From what I hear you saying, it's about developing a relationship. You have,
yes,
to, your faith, God reveals himself to us. We're also called to reveal ourselves to him, open ourselves up, and form relationship with him.
Right.
And that is probably the scariest territory. I mean, it's one thing to know all kinds of things, proof texts on the Immaculate Conception, which are important, very mm-hmm. important, but that he calls us into relationship, doesn't he?
He does. That's the key, and it's not only in seeing how that evidenced itself in his own ministry and with the apostles and with the people of Israel, but it is how God wants to connect with us, that this is not a remote God. This is not simply a God of rules and laws. This is a God of love, and everything in our lives points towards this need for relationship. And what's so surprising is that we are if we're working on relationships in our family or with our friends, we know that contact and communication are so critical. We know we have to stay in touch. We have to nurture them. In a marriage is, you know, a classic example of that. And yet somehow we think it's okay that we can just put God on the back burner and you know, we'll talk to him when we're feeling down or when we need something, and otherwise it's sort of autopilot. That great line from Matthew Kelly, "Listen, Lord, your servant is speaking." Where we just reverse everything here, and instead of seeing it really as that relationship, and I think that's what's so great about prayer. I mean, prayer is just that communication, and it's a two-way communication that's taking place. But we've got a lot of people functioning on autopilot. Archbishop Shapu gave a great talk at the Catholic Media Conference in Indianapolis in June, and he described the rather dire situation in Philadelphia. And he said, you know, at one point, he said that mass attendance in Philadelphia has now sunk to 18%.
Wow.
It was 40% in Denver, where he has served. And you know, who would have thought that 40% sounds like the really good number now, but 18% is abysmal. And he said, you know, we've become mission territory again. And I think that is sort of the state of the faith in too many dioceses and too many parishes, and we really need that new evangelization effort.
Yeah, the thing that is so compelling to me is how the Holy Father has set this up to launch this year of faith. He has been offering to us and was the audiences for well over a year, maybe a year and a half, teachings on prayer and about the relationship that God desires for us.
Yeah.
Right before the Synod begins, he's elevating these doctors, essentially, of prayer, of Hildegard and then John of Avila, who was the great discerner. He seems to be leading us. It's more than just the head and the knowledge stuff.
Right.
It's about relationship.
Right. And I think this is important to remember as in the present climate in the church, because we clearly have a recovery of doctrine that's going on right now in many quarters, and you know, people might describe it as the new conservatism, but there is a sense of, you know, what does the church teach and why does it teach it, and you know, we take that very seriously at our Sunday Visitor, but we can't forget that this relational aspect, this heart aspect, this relationship of love is absolutely critical, and it's what drives everything else. And you know, I was just reading, you know, St. Paul letter to the Corinthians, where he's talking about, you know, love, and it's read at every wedding, but it's still a great passage. You know, there's faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. We get this message all over, and we sort of yawn and nod, and it's, you know, almost a cliche, but we have to make it real in our lives. And when we have that love relationship, I think a lot of the other things flow from that.
Our Sunday Visitor has done extraordinary things to help parishes be able to form those who will help to pass on the faith, not only to children, but also to adults, and all the formation materials you have. That catechist really needs to have, first and foremost, that anchor in that relationship. Otherwise, they get burned out real fast, don't they?
Yes. We just had an interesting discussion with a group of catechetical leaders, kind of a little round table, and one of the things that came from that was, you know, how do you sustain catechists, and the fact that, unfortunately, it's a somewhat undervalued vocation, mm-hmm. and I think that the church really needs to emphasize the importance of being the catechist. Of course, and we know that the first classroom is the family, and that we're especially all of us as parents are called to be catechists. But there is a vocation here, and what's amazing is, as one person said, you know, catechists are dying for the faith all around the world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen in our country. We see that, you know, being invited to be a catechist is, you know, your child is in eighth grade, and the DRE leans on you to take over the eighth grade class and volunteer and teach it, and it's perhaps not fully embraced as a high spiritual calling, and yet elsewhere in the world it's a path to martyrdom, and it's a path to great sacrifice and personal cost. And we so our catechists are so valuable, our DREs are so valuable, the people who are leading the religious education of the next generation and also of adults is so valuable, and I think we really need to appreciate that. And then, as you said, how do we build up the supports and the materials for renewing and sustaining the people who are providing the service? And one of the experts says it's almost like we need an ongoing retreat or a spirit of retreat, you know, so there's that constant sense of renewal and contact with the Lord to nourish these efforts. And of course that's a big order when so many parishes are squeezed for money and squeezed for staff and all that. And yet that really should be the goal that we're working for.
Just recently, some of the wonderful books that you've brought forward to kind of nurture that heart relationship, whether it's the Heart of Catholic Prayer with Mark Shea, mm-hmm. or even the Sherry Waddell book, Forming Intentional Disciples, and Holiness for Everyone by Eric Sammons. I could go on. The list goes on, and anybody just go to osv.com and you'll be able to find those. But those books in particular are really, there's a depth to them that I think OSV is really responding to those heart elements.
Well, and I think also that sense that we need to, you know, in our each one of those renewing, you know, realizing, for example, in Salmon's book, that idea of the pursuit of holiness, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. ask of all of us and that we're all called to. Sherry Waddell really finding a way to reinvigorate the parishes and take that message to the staff. But I think you've correctly identified that, and I think we really want to present this sort of well-rounded vision of what it means to be Catholic, what it means to be a disciple.
Well, and part of that new evangelization, the Holy Father has told everyone not to be afraid to go into the digital sea. Actually, he said, get out there. And, you know, I think what you've done in your association with Radius Web Tools is so important, because I know there are pastors that are listening right now. I know there are people that are involved in ministries in those parishes that they want to do that, but it scares them to death. And in trying to get on the internet, the need to be responsive to all the different platforms now, the expenses, and
right.
yet this is where people are going. So much is happening on that smartphone right now.
That's right.
And other areas.
Yes, you're exactly right, Chris. And what's interesting is we're seeing these kind of the digital generations happening quicker than human generations, and you know, we're into the third or fourth generation of websites, and what's happened for parishes, I mean, there's always a lag before dioceses and then parishes get on board with providing these tools, and so often, you know, it might be a very well-meaning or dedicated parishioner, someone volunteers and they create the website, and then it looks really nice. It's actually can be fairly rigid. It may be very hard to put new information on it, or the staff member who took care of it leaves and another staff member comes on and they're not sure how to do it, and pretty soon you've got a website that nobody's visiting.
Right.
You know, they may go and find out what the mass times are, and that's about it. Radius tools, which were developed by a group called In the Round, they are very user-friendly. So within half an hour, you can basically be putting up a website. In fact, when they come in and do training, or they're introducing like a sales call, they'll actually create the, you know, help the person walk them through the steps so that within half an hour they've created a website. So they get the tools are user friendly, and they're meant to be able so that a staff secretary or the DRE or whoever wants to take over that responsibility can do that. The other part that we're really pleased with is that there's now the opportunity to get material from OSV Publishing, our Sunday Visitor Publishing, to feed directly into that website. So a daily meditation, a question and answer, some news headlines and all that, so that there's a changeable element that will also bring people to that parish website. So that's something that we're excited about. It's a new channel for us to be able to send our material out. And, you know, one of the first rules of websites is keep it changing, you know, always bring in new material. So in a sense, we're now building that in so that the parish can be a place where it can confidently say, well, you can go there for a five-minute meditation, you can go there to find the answers to these questions, or you can go there to see what's happening in the church today.
Yeah, that's what folks want. They have the opportunity. They would like to be able to go to the site and to be able to find out about religious ed classes, if they're canceled, if it's happening, right. Because maybe there's a weather change. The ability to be able to do that is in this program. But then also, this is the place where they can come and be formed in their faith.
Yes.
It becomes a tool, an extension for the pastor.
Yes.
And he knows his people. And another great element of this is that you've made it inexpensive, because mm-hmm. sometimes there's the big fear that this is going to cost $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 to do this, and you've made it unbelievably affordable.
It's true. It's not. I mean, it's easy to get in, and it's easy to sustain. So it's something that parishes can. They don't have to be afraid that it's going to break the bank, and that's another thing that often happens, especially if an outside firm is brought in. Is that it can become, you know, much more expensive than people are ready for, and the maintenance fees even can be very high. So this really moves; it puts the parish much more in charge.
And but that also that connection, that local connection, that can I say it, subsidiarity element of it all, where the parish is being nurtured. We also need to be sustained by what's happening in the world, and that's why I think it's so important. I wanted to let people know that you've now become the exclusive distributor of the North American edition of the L'Osservatore Romano, the official Vatican newspaper.
That's right. That has attracted a lot of attention, and of course, obviously, we're very pleased to be able to offer this. You know, our connections, both personally and in terms of our company, connections with the Vatican go way back. I had the privilege of being able to cover the Vatican for a number of years for Catholic News Service, and that had a huge impact on me. And I love going back and seeing people there, and it's a great view of the world. And what was so great about covering it was that you, when you're in Rome and when you're in the environment of the Vatican, it's the entire world is there. I mean, you mm-hmm. see every type of religious order. You see people from all over the world coming there, bishops, priests, pilgrims. It's so great. It takes us outside of our more provincial understanding as American Catholics, and says, "Hey, this is what Church Universal really means," and that's the same attraction with L'Osservatore Romano and this English language weekly edition, is that you're suddenly seeing things that you're seeing papal texts that you may never see. You're seeing articles about other parts of the world. You're seeing the Pope's calendar, which, you know, is really interesting, actually. You're just get a chance to see all sorts of different elements of the church that you're not likely to see elsewhere in such a succinct fashion. So we're really pleased about that. And it's always that reminder, is that we are part of a bigger church. And that I think sometimes that gets forgotten. And we get very caught up in our immediate battles and things that are close at home, and I think this publication is a great tool for reminding us of all that we are a part of.
Well, it does give you a great perspective on the world, and I think we need to be able to open the doors wide for ourselves, because if we don't, we can become very narrow. And to come back to an article that you wrote in the August 19th edition of the Our Sunday News or Weekly, which I look forward to receiving it every week because it's always so balanced and it has such a broad scope. You were really struck by what happened at that shooting in Wisconsin at the Sikh temple, and I think a lot of us were at first, because I think the initial reaction, here's somebody going in and shooting up, it's sad to say that they were Muslims, and that in itself is wrong, but we didn't even appreciate the difference. This is scary stuff.
It is, and this is a difficult area for a lot of people, especially, we've been in this state of long-running tension with the certain countries and certain groups, especially in the Islamic world, and there's a lot of anger and frustration that's out there. And I think as Catholics, we just have to be mindful of the fact, first, that we were first following the lead of the Holy Father and the Church. So there's no one that Catholics are afraid to have conversations with, and the Church itself and Church leaders model that behavior. And the second is that we've experienced a lot of prejudice ourselves, and Catholics. There's been, our Sunday Visitor was born at a time when the Church was really being persecuted, when Catholics, people claimed that Catholics could not ever be good American citizens, that they had a loyalty to the Pope. I mean, we hear some of those statements made about other groups today. People said that about Catholics. They didn't feel that Catholics could be good citizens, and there was a whole movement against that, and that was directed against the Irish and the Italians and others who were coming in to the Church at that time. And today, you can argue that we're experiencing maybe a more sophisticated form of discrimination that we're seeing, even to the point in some of the religious liberty battles where churches and organizations that are trying to practice what the Church preaches are now in danger of being sued and penalized by government regulations in different areas. So, we particularly, I think, should be sensitive of prejudice and bias. And what was so painful about this is that the Sikhs have, I heard an interview with one of the leaders of that community after the shooting, and, his love for America was palpable. He said he had never really experienced any strong discrimination, and it came through in everything that he was saying. And, it's just so painful to realize that, six members of his community had been gunned down because of some bigotry or some hatred, and perhaps even a massive misunderstanding.
That lack of virtue in anyone's response. I mean, who knows what was going on in the mind of that sad, sick man who perpetrated this act. But that climate of fear, that climate of anger, that we're called not to be afraid.
Right.
And it kind of brings us right about around circle in this conversation. It has to go back to, we have to be secure and trust in that relationship that we have. After that, we're called to go and learn and form our conscience. And we need the Church to be able to do that properly.
Right. And you just you hit a key phrase, which is that be not afraid. Those first words that John Paul II spoke on the balcony in 1978, and I really think that's still a clarion call to us, is not to be fearful and not to be afraid to take risks. I, as you were talking, I was thinking of the Good Samaritan, and that whole parable, how underappreciated that can be now, but the Samaritan, someone who was you know, viewed as unclean, as outside the group, and taking that risk of caring for that person. And there's so much that we have to remember about that, of what we're being called to do, how we're being called to love, how we're being called to extend ourselves. And now more than ever, because we live in such a polarized environment, and we live in an environment where I think our fears are constantly being agitated, and it's profoundly unchristian and unfaithful to be in this situation. And of course, it's also completely human, but we have to really, I think, as Catholics, we need to fight against that and seek, you know, strive to be not afraid. And even if we are afraid, I think, you know, act as if we're not afraid on occasion, and and push ourselves a little bit to reach out to others.
I'm reminded, of course, the writings of St. Paul in a couple spots where he was afraid. I think it was in the Acts of the Apostles, and Jesus said to him, don't be afraid. I have many friends in this city. And we have to rally with each other, learn from each other. And then that jump over to Ephesians, be able to stand in the day. But you have to be armed with love. If your response isn't virtuous and in love, then wow, watch out, you're in trouble.
Right. And that takes a lot of, you know, it does take work and discipline on our part. I think it's never been presented as being easy. I mean, that same idea of, you know, walking on the water, you know, that, you know, we're, how many of us would be like Peter, you know, even if we got out of the boat, you know, how quickly our fears would overtake us and we would start sinking. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing to do, but we are called to do that, and I think that's part of our challenge. And I'm speaking to myself as much as to anyone else, that we need really to reach out with love and try to overcome the fears that we have.
Well, Greg, I wish we had more time, and because I know there's so much more to talk about. But any final thoughts?
Well, I think this is a great opportunity this year of faith. The fact that it's starting right around the time of this, terribly contentious and divisive election that we're experiencing. I think it's a great countersign from the Church of what we're called to do in terms of renewing ourselves and renewing our parishes and reaching out to others with the good news. I think that's worth meditating on. And Pope Benedict has been a great pope for calling us back to the things that we really need to focus on. And clearly, with the Synod on the New Evangelization and the Year of Faith, and as you said, all of his speeches or his talks on prayer, I think he's made clear what he wants us focusing on right now.
Thank you and everyone at Our Sunday Visitor for expanding and thinking outside of the box and being able to respond to all this so that we can be touched in a multiplicity of ways. There really is no excuse not to be able to renew and then to go out and spread the good news.
Well, and this is our 100th anniversary, and we're celebrating 100 years of trying to fulfill this mission, and I'm really grateful for what you just said. So thank you, Chris.
With Gregory Erlandson, we've been going inside the pages of Our Sunday Visitor. To learn more about the books, periodicals, curriculum, and pamphlets offered by Our Sunday Visitor, go to osv.com. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from today's most compelling authors.